Bah!
All right. Yeah.
This is how backwards Sedano is. GBS, which he said, I kind of like the Greg Bergman show idea.
Nope,
GBS stands for Greg Bergman Stupid. That's what we came up with. The idea was GBS, Greg Bergman Stupid. And Sedano can't even get that right.
Right. And by the way, it can apply to anything. Yeah, it doesn't have to just like, they can do that. Like, if something really dumb happens on the morning show, they can all just look at it and go, that's GBS, guys. And everybody will know. Like, it doesn't have to be from just this.
Yes. Many people are saying that the idea of putting a runner on second base in the 10th inning is GBS. Greg Bergman stupid. But that went right over Sedano's head.
I think it was actually Morales that misquoted and not Sedano.
So Morales is the one that thinks GBS stands for Greg Bergman show?
Yep.
He's the one who put together the promo.
Let me make this perfectly clear. That idea that we would go sit in our cars in the outfield at Dodger Stadium and honk on a good play that, oh, by the way, Brian, would be delayed 10 to 20 seconds because there's always a delay in game broadcasts, is GBS Greg Bergman stupid? And anybody who doesn't understand it, Morales, Sedano, you're stupid. That is a terrible idea. Nobody wants to sit in their car for 8 hours. Nobody. And by the way, Sedano would never do it. He would.
Sedano lives
in the South Bay. Are you kidding? He's in shorts and flip-flops. He's not going to sit in his car to drive for 2 hours and sit in his car for 4 hours and then drive an hour and a half home. Come on. Who is he kidding?
Now, well, I will say this. What the idea that is BKG, which I call Brian Kamenetsky genius, is you put, like, you set up real drive-in movie theaters and just play the game where everybody can watch in their neighborhood without the commute.
Without
you
the drive.
You grill some hot dogs and without the drive. You bring your, you know, you get some barbecue, you grill some hot dogs up, whatever it is. And it's like socially distanced tailgating or what, you know, with while everybody can watch the game. That's how you get Dodger fans together. But you don't make them drive, you know, brave the 110, you know, for that kind of, like, to sit in a parking lot where you can't actually see the game. That's dumb.
And by the way, you can't drink because you got to drive home. And and by the way, the only bad thing about living in L.A., I mean, L.A. is the greatest place in the world, is that it takes an hour and a half to get anywhere. It takes, you know, there's traffic all over the place, and traffic is starting to come back, which is a good thing. That, to me, indicates the coronavirus, even though the numbers are going up, people may be getting back to work and getting back to making a living, and traffic is picking up again. What in the world is Bergman thinking that he's going to put somebody the hardest part about going to a Dodger game is that you've got to get there and back. Dodger Stadium has the worst traffic flow of any physical structure in Los Angeles. This idea is so GBS, I can't even describe it.
And now, I will
trying to stand behind him.
You asked the question, what was Greg Bergman thinking? I will stick up for him in this regard. Greg Bergman loves the Dodgers more than anybody that I know. Like, even, you know, more than Mace, you know, more than Ramona, loves the Dodgers more than anyone. He just wants to be, he wants a piece of that experience, and he wants it in a way that's more than just sitting at home and watching the game. He wants something where he gets to go to the, you know, feel like he can be at the stadium, and like, they're not going to let him in.
Yeah,
not just him, because he's Greg Bergman. They're not going to let anybody in. So
the difference between,
I understand.
The difference between Mason and Bergman is that Bergman does love the Dodgers more than anything. Mason, let's face it, what does Mason love more than anything?
Well, Mason.
Exactly. So that anybody else is second, including the Dodgers.
Right.
Bergman would be like, Mason, if you told Mason he had to go sit in traffic outside Dodger Stadium, he wouldn't do it because he would be inconvenienced. But
right, unless you could tell him that that he would sit in traffic the entire time behind a bus with his picture on it.
Yeah, that would
then
work.
Then he could just follow the bus all the way to Dodger Stadium while staring at himself.
Okay, so a lot going on here. I don't know who screwed up the GBS. I'm going to blame Sedano because, you know, Morales, he's got a million things going on. GBS stands for Greg Bergman Stupid, which is what that idea was. Now, Brian, each day we get more and more news about sports trying to come back. We got the NFL trying to come back. We got Major League Baseball trying to come back. The NBA, in my opinion, has the best chance to come back. And so I'm not sure what to make of this story, and I want to get your opinion. So, as I've said all week, I think the NBA has handled this better than any other sport when it comes to giving themselves the best chance to pull this off. I think there's a chance we could have all these sports, and they're going to try, and it might work. My fingers are crossed. But the NBA has done pretty much everything right. Okay, they've got a bubble. They've gone through doctors. They're keeping everybody in the same place. They're following protocols. They're testing left, right, and sideways. Almost no other sport can say that. Baseball is, they're going to be staying in hotels and going to different cities and sleeping in their own bed. If a baseball player wants to go to a bar like that soccer team did down in Florida, the baseball team could go to a bar anytime they want. The NBA players can't. And the reason I know they can't is, Brian, it came out today, reported by various sources, that the NBA will use federal, state, local, and special forces to maintain the integrity of the bubble. I heard that and I went, that sounds like pretty restrictive. And then I thought, but it might be a little bit genius. Which one is it? I can't decide.
Well,
if you're going to do this, you might as well do it, right?
Right. There's a lot going on here. I think the big question is: are the officials there to keep people in or to keep other people out? And I think the answer is probably a little bit of both. To monitor people kind of coming in and out. But we know everything about where these guys are going to be, down to the hotels they're at. Like, I know what hotel the Lakers are staying at. And while normally, John,
that's not something that like obviously I know because I stay with them.
Right.
I never talk about it.
Nobody ever does.
Yeah.
Just you can find out that information.
Right. But
generally speaking, it is not public information. I know where every team is staying inside the bubble. And so, yeah, I mean, Disney is a giant campus, and I'm sure there are ways to get in and out of there. I don't know. And so you need people to make sure that other people don't come after this population of very prominent people doing something very prominent and trying to play, finish the basketball season. So there's a security element here that I think is really important in terms of policing players to make sure they don't leave. That, I think, is a little dicier, particularly given the climate we're in. But I honestly think a lot of it is really related to how do we make sure that the players are kept safe from people coming from outside into the bubble. And in that sense, I think it's smart, I think it's necessary.
And I think, again, the NBA is giving themselves over and over and over again. I say they're giving themselves the best chance to make this work. We had Buster Olney on the other day. And Buster absolutely sounds convinced that baseball is never getting off the ground. And a lot of other people think that, too. I'm rooting for sports to come back. I want this to work. But, a lot of people have lobbied for Bob Costas to be the baseball commissioner. You know, that's how smart he is and how much he loves baseball. We had two people on the show yesterday, Brian, you and I. We had Scott Boras, who told us that every one of his clients is itching to get back out onto the field. He doesn't have one. He represents 100 plus players. He doesn't have one player, he says, who doesn't want to play. CJ Nitkowski, who works for MLB Network Radio, said he's in Atlanta, said that they've had player after player after player on because they can get to him because everybody's been sitting at home. And he says he hasn't heard from one player that doesn't want to play baseball. But listen to Bob Costas, who was interviewed today, and here's his thoughts on that possibility.
They have to be asking that very same question. It's the only question, really, now that since we're talking about baseball, they've worked out some kind of makeshift plan to play 60 games per team and get through some kind of season. But there are so many needles to thread between here and there. It's like a tightrope walk. Can you make it from one end of the ravine to the other? Yeah, but it's not guaranteed. And as more of these cases crop up, you see all the peril involved, not just to the season, but to the health of many of those involved. And I think what you're going to see in baseball and in other sports is players opting out, thinking it's not worth the risk either to them or to family members to play an abbreviated season.
Brian, which is it? Are Nitkowski and Boris right, or is Costas and Buster right?
I think the majority of players will play. I think you will find some players will back out for the same reason Avery Bradley has, because it's just too much of a burden on their families. Maybe they have, you know, health issues, you know, with their wives or their children,
right,
whatever.
Brian,
it might
if be. 10 NBA but, players back out, that means the overwhelming majority are in.
Right. I'm saying so, like, if I think there'll be some, and I think there'll be some baseball players who just feel like the health risk isn't worth it. But I think the most of it, if there is a season, I think most of these guys will go out and play. I mean, and I'm sure they're assuming that there will be, at least at this point. But, you know, I think what it gets to is the challenge that some of these sports that haven't started yet have in front of them, which is, you know, beginning it, you know, from the beginning where you try to figure out what we're going to do, and football is going to have to figure out how we're going to do this for a full season or whatever it is. There's a lot of stuff in front of it. But, you know, baseball seems to have a plan. And I would suspect that if they play, most players will show up. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah, it seems to me that it becomes a big story when anybody like Davis Bertans or Avery Bradley or Trevor Ariza sits out. But for every Ariza and every Bertans, isn't the real truth that there's 20 guys who are in? I mean, it seems like we're overcovering the guys. Are we guilty as a media here of overcovering the guys who are opting out?
No, because I think what we're looking for is that sort of the signal of what's coming. And, you know, you can put them in order. Bertans is less important than Ariza because Portland is better than Washington. Ariza is less important than Avery Bradley because Bradley is a starting point guard on a team that has title aspirations. But when you go through all of these things, like Bertans is the one where you'd look at it and be like, that's kind of selfish. Why aren't you going out there and playing? You know, because he's getting one of the premier free agents this offseason, but he's playing for a team that has 0% chance of advancing past the first round of the playoffs if they even get to it. So it's the equivalent of, you know, a player on, you know, Iowa State deciding to skip the Peanut Bowl or something. Like, no, it doesn't really matter. And Ariza has real family considerations that he's got to take into. Bradley's got the same thing. I think it's when you start to see star players or multiple players on the best teams not showing up or not agreeing not to play. That's when it really becomes news. And I think the theory is, like, once one person says, I'm not going to play, it opens the door for other people. Once one guy says, you know, the moment in social justice and racial justice is too important, I'm not going to play, maybe Dwight Howard then decides, okay, I have somebody kind of going with me, if that makes sense.
All right,
I mean, there's still time for guys to back out. I think most of them will play, but there is still it will not just be these three. I guarantee you that.
All right, let's try and answer a difficult question. Let's say, for the sake of discussion, all of these sports get off the ground. In other words, they're able to start. Baseball starts, basketball starts, even football starts. What would it take to call the whole thing off? One team gets COVID and can't play. Is that enough? God forbid someone is in critical condition or even worse, passes away. I would think that shuts down all of them. I don't know. We'll let you jump in on it, too. 877-710-ESPN. It's the old line, you hope for the best and prepare for the worst. I'm not sure where anybody's head is as to what could derail this. We'll get into that coming up. Mason in Ireland. Brian Kamenetsky's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason in Ireland show. I'm John Ireland. Brian Kamenetsky is filling in for Mace. And all right, so we're going to think optimistically here. Brian, we're going to think that all of these things get off the ground. Okay, all these sports get enough. I mean, I know there are a lot of people who think that some of them might not, but we're going to think optimistically and say that all of these sports do. What's the point of no return? Is it a whole team getting COVID? Is it like an elite star, like Giannis gets COVID?
Giannis gets COVID. They keep playing. It's a bummer for the Bucks, but you know, onward. I mean, if you don't, cancel the playoffs if Giannis sprains an ankle, you know, so I mean, it's if everybody else is still okay and you can show that, then the Bucks go on and it sucks for the Bucks. But like, you know, that's, you know, what it means is for the rest of us to debate. I think the only thing, honestly, that really genuinely stops it is an outbreak inside a team that makes one team have to stop playing, because then like, how do you figure that out? Or like, but I don't know.
Well,
like,
okay, so let's say you're from St. Louis. Let's say 15 Cardinals test positive for COVID. I hope it doesn't happen. Let's say it does. They're allowed to have, what did we read? Lindsay, how many players can they have on the roster? They can have up to 50, right?
50 is a taxi squad, yeah.
Okay, so Brian, they'd still have 35.
I thought it was 60 even.
Is that's for baseball?
Yeah, for baseball. No, for baseball.
Yeah, I think it's 60.
All right. Well, either way,
it's 60, I believe.
Let's say you lose 15 guys, so you still have 35 left. But let's say it's your starting eight plus your two best pitchers. We still playing?
We're still playing. We may not be very good, but in the case of the Cardinals, it's okay because we have a way, and so the Cardinal way will win out, and so the other 35 guys, whoever's left,
will magically adopt.
Be fine.
Yeah,
don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're cool.
Yeah. So it's, you know, all these people like Costas, even Buster saying, I don't see how this is going to happen. There's just too many variables. I think once you get the ball rolling down the hill, as long as there is, like, God forbid somebody dies, that would be, I think, the end of all of this. And it's very unlikely to happen because most of these people are young and they're testing like crazy. But, Brian, one thing about the virus, we don't know. There's so much we don't know. So let's, again, thinking positively, say that doesn't happen. Is there anything else? I think that they're moving forward.
I don't think there's any question like that. Short of like, they're going to try to get these things going. I look at it this way. You remember that scene in Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom? Like where he's got to go through and he's like stepping on the right square. And if he steps on the wrong one, he falls through. And then the poison darts come flying out and all that stuff. Like that's a little bit what this is like. But how does that scene end, John? He gets the thing and he runs back out and he gets what they're looking for. So it's not easy to get from point A to point B, but it's possible. And I think that's where these sports are. I mean, basketball, what really I think is smart about the way the NBA has done it in the way that MLS is my understanding, because they're starting at the same time too. WNBA also is that it's not built on nobody gets coronavirus. It's built on containing it. They assume that players will contract it. Staff, someone will get it while they're there. And what they want to do is contain that spread inside the environment. And they feel like if they have everybody quarantined at the beginning and they are constantly testing in the way they are, that you won't have to shut it down for one positive test. And so I think that's what makes this possible and what makes it smart. It's not easy. And it could go wrong, and like there's no guarantee they're going to get to the end of what they're trying to start. But I don't think it's impossible that they can do it, particularly in the model that basketball has.
All right, so let's assume they get this up and running and that it's going, okay? That these teams play and we get a season. We get a basketball season, we get a baseball season, We might get a football season, but that seems the most far-fetched. But let's say we get a basketball season. Did you see what Jackie McMullen said today? She said, and Funch, I'm going to cue the, I'm have you cue this up for me. Brent, she said something that I disagree with. She was talking about what would be harder to do, what would be more impressive, winning six titles with one team or winning three titles mm-hmm. with three different teams. Here's what she said.
I want to point something out, though. You guys keep harping on the idea that he could win championships with three different teams. I would argue it's a lot harder to stay with one team your entire career and win six of them.
It's a good debate.
LeBron won in Miami, I and then he said, you know, the Spurs bludgeoned him in 2014, and then he moved on and went back to Cleveland.
I think, Brian, I think it's the opposite. I think that if you get a structure in place, particularly like you look at the Shaq Kobe Lakers, had they stayed together, they went to four finals in 5 years, I think they would have won a bunch more titles. Some people disagree with that. The Bulls won six titles. If you go, like, has anyone ever done, both Kawhi and LeBron are trying to do something this year that I'm not sure anybody's done in any sport. Has anyone ever won three championships on three different teams when they were the best player? Has that ever happened?
I am not a person, John, who casually disagrees with Jackie Mack. It's just not something I'm comfortable
doing.
Oh,
she's great.
But
I think it's harder to do what LeBron and Kawhi are trying to do.
I don't even think they're comparable. I think the challenges are so different, because the one thing you can say about LeBron is, like, kind of everywhere LeBron goes, he kind of creates a championship caliber team. His presence makes every team he goes to capable of winning a title. And so you got to kind of put a little stuff around him and whatever it might be. The challenge, like, when you're Kobe Bryant, you want to win five with one team, six with one team, whatever it might be, is as much on the general manager as it is the player. Like, it's hard to keep one guy in one place now for 20 years. That's unquestionably difficult to do. But the mechanics of building a really good championship team, or, you know, building a championship team, then, you know, you get to that place where you can't keep it together anymore. You got to rebuild it, you know, just the money of it, and then building it back up. That's not really something the star does. That's something that management does. And so, you know, if the Lakers can't get Pau Gasol, if they don't draft Andrew Bynum, if they don't do all this other stuff, it doesn't matter how good Kobe is. He's not winning another title with the Lakers. You know, he could go somewhere else and win it, but he wouldn't do it with the Lakers. You've got to build that team back up around him. So I just don't think the challenges are comparable. I don't kind of accept the premise of the comparison, which I know you're not supposed to do in this line of work, but I don't think it's the same thing.
Well, it's not, but and that's my point. It's harder to do what Kawhi and LeBron are trying to do because of all the things you said. If you get all
well,
those
no,
pieces,
but it's also in some ways it's easier because you're just going from one. Kawhi went from one place where he won a title. You know, I think it was surprising that they won one in Toronto, but he kind of engineered the one that he could go win in with the Clippers by saying, "I'll show up if you go get me Paul George." At the same time, and now we've got that super team ready to go. So he just kind of walks into this place where he can win a title. Is that Kawhi doing something really hard? Is that his agent doing something really hard? I'm not sure who is doing the hard thing here.
Well, if Kawhi would have come to the Lakers, that would have been an unbeatable super team, to have Kawhi, AD, and LeBron all on the same team. And according to
reports,
about it. That was his choice. He had it down to the Lakers and the Clippers. So if he goes to the Clippers and wins a title for a franchise that has never won a title, I think that's extraordinary. I think it's extraordinary he was able to do it in Toronto. Brian, it's hard to win a title. It's hard to get to the finals. And LeBron's legacy is, if he's on your team, you have an excellent chance of going to the finals. The guy's been to 9 finals. He went to 8 in a row.
Yes.
I mean, yes. If he wins it in his first year with Anthony Davis, in his first year with Frank Vogel as his head coach, when, as you point out, the rest of the team league tried to load up against him. The Clippers tried to build a super team. Milwaukee went all in. I mean, I just don't see
that as any more or less impressive than if he had stayed in Cleveland and figured out a way to win another one. I think the conversation stops at what you said at the beginning of your sentence there, which was, it's so hard to win a title. Right. There's never a context in which it's easy. So like you could kind of argue that the way that Jordan did it was actually the easiest, because they only kind of had to turn that team over once. And really, it was the supporting guys around Jordan and Pippen that turned over. The core, the two stars, stayed the same the entire time. And they didn't have to rebuild it, you know, in year one versus year 12 or whatever it was. So you can make an argument, if you're going to try to win six titles, that's the easiest way to do it. So it doesn't make it easy. I think you're right. Winning is so difficult. There is no context in which one is simpler than the other.
All right, if you want to jump in on this, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We got the scoop. The headlines are coming up. We've got Radio Tinder coming up. Brian wrote a game today, which you know, could be very interesting. We don't turn you loose on the game front. Alden Gonzalez is scheduled to join us on the show later. Lots coming up. Mason in Ireland. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, today it's Brian Kamenetsky in Ireland. Mason on another pandemic vacation. And I still think Mason may have this figured out, what the rest of the world hasn't, is if they're not going to call you on taking vacation, take as much as you can. I don't think he went anywhere. I think he said he was going to stay here. But anyway, we're talking about...
There's still nowhere to go.
Yeah. We're talking about LeBron and the fact that what he's trying to accomplish, and I'll throw Kawhi into this mix too, trying to win a third title. Well, LeBron actually won two in Miami, so for him it would be a fourth. But trying to win a title with a third different team when you were the best player on all three teams. And that was part of a discussion today that Jalen Rose and Jay Williams had on Get Up, specifically about LeBron. Here's part of that conversation.
I like where you were going with that, Greeny, except the headline didn't represent the fine print. And here's what I mean. During this era, the Golden State Warriors have also won three championships. Kevin Durant, finals MVP twice. And you're right, LeBron does have a chance to win finals MVP on his third team. So does Kawhi Leonard. So yes, at stake for 35 years old, 17th year without Avery Bradley, I agree with you. The time in the hourglass is ticking. But LeBron James's greatness is cemented. I don't think winning one or two championships, for that matter, would put those like myself who understand the greatness of Michael Jordan and put LeBron in the conversation of passing him just because he won one, if not two, with the Los Angeles Lakers.
All right, I'll bookmark that. Let me hear from Jay Williams. Jay, what do you think?
Jalen Rose, I love you. I don't know how many times we're on ESPN NBA Countdown. We'll be on there, you know, the next couple of days talking about this. But the amount of hate I feel that comes out of your voice every time we talk about LeBron James' greatness to deflect it to somebody else is beyond me, my brother. Beyond me. You're going to tell me, because I've seen you align yourself with LeBron James for more than a vote, for suppressed votes in different economies, right? So you're going to tell me that through the midst of a pandemic, through social protest about systematic racism and the voice that LeBron James has had in the direction of the critical mass of our country that he has stood on, if he's able to win a world championship through going down to a Hot Pocket in Orlando, where it's gone up 380% in the last week of COVID-19 cases, to go into that bubble after losing Avery Bradley, taking J.R. Smith on this team, that you're not going to let this win this championship, if he gets it, take him to a different stratosphere? You can make the case that all these things are, it's insurmountable to a degree. If he's able to accomplish this, this is probably more difficult to accomplish than actually just winning during the regular NBA playoffs. It for sure will take him to a different level. And people may not compare him to Muhammad Ali and others because maybe, you know, he didn't go over and not fight a war or other people. But still, what he's doing right now is monumental for today's athlete.
All right, Brian, so a lot there to unpack. I think, and they made some reference to it there, I think LeBron has done more with his platform than any team sport athlete maybe ever. If you look at the school he opened in Akron, if you look at all of the causes he has supported, if you look at all the outside businesses he's been a part of. So his off-the-court legacy, I think, is set. But what we're debating is on the court. Is what LeBron trying to do comparable to Jordan winning six titles in Chicago? And again, I absolutely disagree with Jalen. I think it completely is. If he pulls this off, and Jay's whole like support LeBron speech there didn't even mention the tragic death of Kobe, which basically did a reset on the whole season for the Lakers.
This year has been bonkers for, like, if you go through, John, we're really only barely a year away from Magic Johnson stepping away from the Lakers. Like, it's been 15 months since that happened, since this franchise was in not just like a bad place, but like incredible turmoil. They had no coach. The front office was seen as like hiding and no, you know, like all the, it was the last summer was awful. And now you look at where they are, where they've been, and they've come through the death of Kobe, you know, COVID-19, and now if they go back and win a title, this is one of the most remarkable runs I think that any team has ever had. And that is directly linked to LeBron's play and his leadership. I mean, I think this becomes the most impressive title that he's won. But, you know, the whole thing, John, wouldn't you agree? Like, the whole thing is designed when you have these arguments to protect the legacy of Michael Jordan, to make sure that nobody quite gets over the Jordan hump. And the way we worship rings now, MJ gets 6-0. He always gets 6-0. LeBron's record in the finals is below 500. And so therefore MJ has it over LeBron. I mean, the whole thing is just rigged so that LeBron and or Kobe or anybody else can't win the argument. And that's why I think it's really frustrating about it.
Well, I always wonder too, when you talk about winning record versus losing record in the finals, don't you get some type of credit for making it to the finals? For example, Magic Johnson was 5-4 in the NBA finals. All right. He was 5-4. Is that less impressive than Michael Jordan going 6-0? Magic made it to 9 finals. Michael made it to 6. Michael won them all. And you got to tip the scales towards Michael because he won 6. But Magic went to 9 finals. And they were all in an 11-year stretch. It was all from 1980 to 1991. And I think you got, you get some credit for making it to the finals?
I think it's one of the strangest things that we do in sports. We penalize people for getting far. Like, if LeBron had lost a couple of these series in the conference finals and not made it, he'd be thought of differently because his record in the finals would be different. There's one finals you can look at LeBron and say, okay, he didn't play well. His team should have won that series. And that's the one against Dallas. LeBron did not play well. Miami was a better team, should have won that series. They were the favorite team. And so you could put that on LeBron. Okay. But like, are you really going to hold it against LeBron that he took that first Cavs team to the finals? That team was terrible. You know, with like, you know, Boobie Gibson and, you know, I think it was like Eric Snow and like, that was not a good team. And he got to the finals and of course got, you know, the Spurs beat the snot out of him. But of course they did. You know, are you really going to penalize LeBron for not beating the Warriors a second time by himself? He basically did it once by himself and couldn't quite do it twice.
And so by the way, the LeBron's year he did fault. And Brian, the year he beat him was the 73-9 team. He beat a 73-win team, him and Kyrie. Here's Austin in Corona. Austin, you're on 710 ESPN. In your opinion, what's harder, winning 3 titles with 3 different teams or winning 6 with 1?
What's up, guys? Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been listening for a long time. I definitely think that it's so much harder to join a new team. If you think about it, LeBron has, when he's jumped onto a new team, they've been, you know, underperforming teams or teams that have not proven themselves or teams that are going to be, you know, going through a rebuild. And, you know, another big issue is the coach. He's had a different head coach each time. And, you know, I would argue that because of not having a coach, not having the structure that Michael Jordan had with Phil Jackson, you know, he had to be the one to get, you know, his teammates kind of solidified into specific roles around him. Whereas Michael Jordan, you know, had Phil Jackson, who kind of knew the system and knew what Jordan was all about and knew the positions that needed to, you know, form around Jordan. He was able to help kind of put those guys in those positions. So, you know, I definitely think maybe that's why you guys have had, you know, the issues you've had with your show with all the producer changes.
Yes, if this show survives yet another producer, we should receive huge accolades. All right, thanks, Austin, for the phone call. I think that you're – and by the way, Brian, on top of this whole argument over if LeBron pulls this off, does he get into the conversation with Jordan, LeBron's going to finish his career, and he's going to be the only one. Top three in scoring, top three in assists. Think about that. No other player's ever done it. LeBron's heading that way. He's going to be, not only does he score more points than anyone else, he sets up more people than anybody else.
If it's one of these things where, John, like, if you're willing to remove count the rings, the Last Dance reminded me how good Jordan is. Like, you forget, like, early Michael Jordan's like, damn, that guy could do some stuff. But, like, the notion that you could have this discussion about LeBron James versus Michael Jordan isn't crazy, especially if you're willing to just say there's something that's more important than 6-0. If you can put that aside for a minute and just say other things count too, you can have the discussion. Jordan probably still comes out ahead, maybe a little. But, like, LeBron, that what he's done over the course of his career – different teams, different, you know, the style of play, the scoring with the assists, the durability, the longevity, the fact that he's playing at an MVP level in year 17, we've never seen anything like this. And I'm including Michael Jordan. So, I mean, come on, you can protect MJ without trying to figure out ways to cut down LeBron in the way that a lot of MJ protectors try to do.
All right, 877-710-ESPN if you want to jump in on this. The scoop coming at the top of the hour. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mace and Ireland show. Brian Kamenetsky sitting in for Mace. We're kicking around something Jackie McMullen said this morning on Get Up. In case you missed it, here's Jackie with Mike Greenberg trying to make the point that what Michael Jordan did is in a different class than what LeBron and Kawhi are trying to do. Here's Jackie Mack.
I want to point something out, though. You guys keep harping on the idea that he could win championships with three different teams. I would argue it's a lot harder to stay with one team your entire career and win six of them.
It's a good debate.
LeBron won in Miami, I and then he said, you know, the Spurs bludgeoned him in 2014, and then he moved on and went back to Cleveland.
And the reason I think she's wrong is that if you have a group, a championship group in place, you don't have to do a lot. You just got to keep them together. If you change teams and go to a new city, you've got a new coach, a new GM, new teammates, new surroundings, new everything. You know how hard it is to even get to the finals? And this guy, LeBron, might go to the third different team and be the best player in the finals.
And not just that, like the best player in the league. Like LeBron, the length of time that LeBron has been, if not the best player in the NBA, no worse than like the fourth or fifth. I mean, I'm not even sure, other than maybe last year where he got hurt and I don't think was quite as invested as he normally is. When was the last time LeBron James wasn't one of the five best players in basketball or the three best players? Like his third
maybe,
year in the league?
Yeah, maybe when
it's
he
been
was 20.
15 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
but that doesn't.
But I'm just saying, it's not even that he's just the best player in the finals or the best player, because sometimes the best player in the league doesn't get that far. He's been the best player to be able, and that means he's pulling teams sometimes that aren't as good. Like some of these Cleveland teams, I mean, the Miami teams were really good, but some of these Cleveland teams that he went to the finals with and won in the finals with were not as good as the other teams that they were playing. They won or got to, you know, got to the finals because LeBron was that good. And that means something.
Let's go to Brian in LA. Brian, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey guys. I think Jackie's 100% right. I think it's harder to be drafted by a team like Jordan and Kobe and stick around. You know, you with the documentary, you saw the first few years and Jordan, he didn't really have that much around him. Management wasn't great. He didn't choose a coach and he had to weather that. And then he was able to build that team. But you know what LeBron did? I understand he went and chose this team. He orchestrated. It's one thing to be traded. It's another one to be orchestrated with other players to go to a team and you know, win. I think it's harder what Jordan and what Kobe did in a sense than what LeBron did. But I think LeBron's one hell of a player and generational player.
All right. Thanks, Brian, for the phone call. Let's go to Rod. It says here Rod is working at SoFi Stadium. Rod, is that true? You're one of the construction guys at SoFi?
Sounds like it.
Yes, sir. I'm a glazer. We're actually rolling up, getting ready to go home. But I just wanted to share real quick. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant had Phil Jackson, guys. Come on now. Phil Jackson. LeBron James had Tyronn Lue. I don't even know the freaking name from the dude at Miami Heat. I mean, she's pretty good, but... I mean, come on. These guys had Phil Jackson.
Right, well...
And, you know, I mean, look, Spo's a good coach. I mean, there's no...
Eric Spoelstra is the guy in Miami.
Is, you know, yeah. And so, like, he's proven to be an excellent coach. But, I think, you know, when you look at LeBron, there are ways... That, you know, what MJ did was incredibly impressive. What Kobe had to do was incredibly impressive. Kobe had Shaq. You know, who's the best player that, that LeBron had? I mean, like, there's all kinds of ways you can slice and dice this. But the big thing is, like, you don't have to find ways to undercut LeBron to say that MJ might have been a little better or whatever it might be. Like, what, and it's important, I think, that we all appreciate just what LeBron James has done over the course of his career. And it's a lot easier to do it now that he's a Laker, because when he wasn't, this wasn't such a popular conversation in L.A.
Rod, are you still there, or did we lose him?
Sir.
Hey, Rod, how's the stadium look?
It's really nice, man. It's humongous. It makes Dodger Stadium look small.
Well, it'll be interesting to see when we get in there. Could they play a game? Is it still under construction, or could they play a game there like in a month? Are they still working on it? What's it look like?
They just laid out the grass, the turf. They just finished laying out the turf today. They still have a little bit of work to do. All the seats are in. Most of the glass is in. I'm putting in the glass right now. Just where I'm kind of just going back on the loose ends, kind of touching everything up. But it's getting very close. It's a beautiful stadium, humongous.
All right, thanks, man. Stay safe out there. That's Rod working on SoFi Stadium. Here's Gary in Burbank. Hey, Gary, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
How are you today?
Good, Gary. How are you doing?
Hey, good. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about what Jackie McMullen said about Jordan winning 6-0. I think she's correct in the sense that it is harder to win with one team. You know, a lot of people talk about those Cavs teams that LeBron was on. They always talk about how bad it was. I think a lot of people forget in 09 and 10, those teams had the best records in the league. And, you know, they were actually favored to make it to the finals. So they were pretty good teams, and they underachieved. And, you know, I say this, you know, with, you know, a lot of respect to LeBron. He's one of the greatest players of all time. But, you know, a lot of people forget that. And then it's also hard to stay with one team and then, you know, having to face adversity, kind of like how Jordan did, how Kobe did, you know. In 2014, when he lost to the Spurs, you know, he could have still stayed with Miami. You know, he chose to go to a better team, go and play with better players, you know. So I think there's something that needs to be said about having to face adversity and then building a team to a championship team, just kind of like how Kobe did. You know, when Shaq left, he was playing with, you know, Smush Parker and Kwame Brown. You know, he could have gone and teamed up with, you know, Allen Iverson and T-Mac and Vince Carter, you know. But he didn't do that. You know, he waited. He went through the adversity, and then they finally got Pau Gasol, and we won. So I think there's something that needs to be said about that.
All right. Thanks, Gary, for the phone call. Appreciate it. Here's Art in Tarzana. Hey, Art, you're on 710 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Art.
I mean, just adding on top of it, he was just talking about the adversity. I mean, LeBron could have stayed in Miami and went on with that team, but you're talking about rebuilding a team. Last year, he was playing with the, you know, Lonzo Ball and the Ingrams and this and that. And look at where he brought the culture of the Lakers, man. It's back, you know. We went through the whole Magic thing. We were a joke of a franchise, but he brought it back up there. My main thing is, I just think we got to sit back and enjoy what LeBron is really doing. It doesn't matter what player is next to him and, you know, exactly what coach he has, what system he's in. We have a chance to win it, and it's that simple. And I've been talking about this pretty much all time since LeBron's been in L.A. I'm a diehard Lakers fan. I've been a Kobe fan. And it's always been you hated to love LeBron, but right now you just gotta enjoy it. And Laker fans, this is a great time. 17th year, and he's putting on a show, and he's going to bring it home to L.A. That's all I want to say.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate the phone call. Coming up next, The Scoop. We'll cover all the headlines we haven't talked about yet. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.